Now, if the so-called free world, and you see it built all around you in our glorious cities, the place that Kim Jong-un might refer to as the cesspool of evil, it looks the way it does maybe because of our freedom, do you think? What, in that case, might a place like North Korea look like? Now, our imaginations run riot about this in the West because, well, we don't know. We see so little of North Korea. But if we have an image, I wonder if it is of sort of drab Soviet-style construction, a place groaning under the weight of crumbling concrete slabs. maybe yes, maybe not. It could be that North Korea is not as drab as our imaginations might have it. Oliver Wainwright knows. He's architecture critic for The Guardian, and he has visited, and he found a pastel hipster dream. He has chronicled it in a new book, Inside North Korea, and he joins us from London via Skype. Oliver, welcome.
Thanks, Jonathan.
So it's not a Stalinist concrete oppressive nightmare?
I mean, I was surprised, as I think your listeners will be, when I first arrived. You know, you have this kind of preconceived image in your head of, as you say, marching blocks of crumbling concrete and kind of monumental boulevards and, you know, state buildings built with a kind of Stalinist neoclassicism. And when I got there, I have to say I was shocked, first of all, by the amount of colour everywhere. It must be one of the most colourful cities I've ever visited anywhere in the world, because there are these endless concrete apartment blocks, but they're painted in shades of kind of pale pink, yellow ochre, terracotta, minty green, all the kind of pastel palette colors of the rainbow. And then in amongst this kind of sea of pastel blocks, they actually have some very original kind of quirky buildings. So I suppose the most famous is the what's been nicknamed the Hotel of Doom, which is this kind of gigantic pyramid spaceship hotel building in the center of the city. But as well as that, they have there's the National Ice Rink, which is shaped like a kind of concrete teepee. There's a weightlifting gymnasium shaped like a pair of dumbbells.
Of course there is.
A badminton arena where the roof is the arc of a flying shuttlecock. You know, it's almost kind of postmodernism, but before postmodernism. These are buildings from the kind of 1960s and 70s. So, yeah, no, there's a lot of originality there.
So this suggests a somewhat thriving local architectural and construction sort of industry and environment.
Yeah, well, I don't know if thriving is the right word, because obviously all of this stuff is state-directed, top-down, very kind of artificially funded in that way. There's still no real kind of private development or construction economy. But I suppose, yeah, under Kim Jong-un, things have changed. So I suppose, you know, since 2011, every year, he's unveiled a new trophy project. So I think the first was a scheme called Changjon Street, which was nicknamed Pyeonghattan by local diplomats because it was the first kind of high-rise cluster of towers. And people thought this was like a one-off publicity stunt. You know, oh, look, he's building skyscrapers to give an image of prosperity. But then the following year, another scheme was unveiled, Future Scientist Street, even more futuristic than the one before, with these, again, more towers shaped like rockets and like inverted pagodas, another series of apartment buildings shaped like calligraphy brushes. And then the same thing happened the following year. So now Pyongyang is dotted by these kind of clusters of high-rise housing. I mean, mostly it's interesting that they still assign housing by workers group. So the Future Scientist Street was designed for scientists and academics in the university, and then they have a separate district for artists. So it's all still very controlled, and there's a kind of tacit black market of, you know, swapping apartments, but most of this stuff is very state-led and then handed out.
Fake your future vocational identity and go and live with the architects and the scientists.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah. One of the things I don't know if this is apocryphal, but of that thing of people visiting Pyongyang and this sort of these Potemkin streetscapes of facades and shops with nothing in them other than the three things placed in the window. This sort of the beauty of the place, I guess, or it's the sense of being a busy modern city is only skin deep, but you're suggesting it goes a bit further than that.
Yeah, again, that's the impression I, you know, arrived with, this kind of preconceived idea that the whole city was a stage set and the things that we would be shown were very much, you know, laid on for tourists. And it was interesting, actually, that we went to one of the new water parks that Kim Jong-un has built, the infrastructure of leisure. And so he's built a river, and next to it is a water park with a wave machine and these plastic-coloured slides. And, you know, the kind of thing you would find in Disneyland, you know, actually fairly advanced. So we arrived, you know, assuming this was just a place for Western tourists, and it was actually heaving with local families at the weekend. You know, very well used. I don't think they were actors that had been laid on just for us. And then we got taken to one of the new department stores, you know, which again was a scene that you might find anywhere in a kind of recently opened up Eastern European country, and all the women kind of queuing up in the makeup aisle to see the latest beauty products. So I think that there is. You know, he's kind of allowing just enough in the way of leisure facilities and shops for people to kind of remain relatively content and not challenge the authority of the leader. So it's quite it's a very cleverly controlled system.
Well, water parks historically being a very famous sop to an unhappy working mass, but the benefit of being a dictator is, of course, that you can have that sort of impact, that you can direct activity in that way. And Kim Jong-un is different in what he's doing to his father and it's his before him. So take us back a little bit historically, because Pyongyang is a place which has been reimagined, has been rebuilt. Mm.
Exactly. It was interesting. I mean, it was entirely flattened by the Korean War. I think only three buildings remained standing in 1953. And so Kim Il-sung, you know, the founder of what was he called the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, you know, what we call North Korea, had an opportunity to lay out his ideal capital from scratch. And so it's a fascinating place to visit, because it really still embodies exactly the same ideology that it was originally built to celebrate, given that the Kim dynasty has been in power ever since, you know, grandfather, son, grandson. Mm. And so he laid it out along similar lines to Moscow. You know, a lot of it was done by Soviet-trained architects. It had these kind of monumental boulevards terminating in generally statues of himself or key state buildings. And he had the Juche ideology, which is the kind of national North Korean ideology of self-reliance, explicitly stated that everything had to come from Korea and Korea alone. And so any kind of whiff of foreign influence, even though this was all being designed by, you know, Russian or Russian-trained architects, it had to be dressed up in a kind of historic Korean costume. And so some of the historic buildings from the 1950s have this kind of neoclassical, slightly Stalinist flavor, but then they have a very North Korean or Korean identity overlaid on top of that. So where you have classical columns, rather than them being cylindrical, they're octagonal, which is a reference to ancient Korean burial temples that you find from, you know, in North and South Korea. A lot of the buildings are topped with these kind of overhanging green tiled giwa rooftops, which again is a reference to those ancient temple structures. So it was very explicit that the architecture should be kind of nationalist in form, socialist in content. That was one of his mottos.
Do you have a sense that other than being an influence on a sort of a Soviet-based aesthetic, that there's with the North Korean whiff about it? I mean, is that gaining in aesthetic confidence? Are we beginning to see more and more a more sort of indigenous North Korean aesthetic emerging in the buildings?
Yeah, I mean, I think under Kim Il-sung, it was still fairly timid and based on this kind of inflated Stalinist classicism with a few bolted on Korean motifs. It was interesting under Kim Jong-il, who I think was very interested in the power of architecture. You know, he was famously a film buff, and I think kind of tried to transform Pyongyang into his kind of ideal film set of a North Korean capital. So he wrote a very long architectural treatise in 1991 called On Architecture, which is a fascinating read, actually. It's a kind of bizarre conflation of, you know, Le Corbusier's Towards New Architecture with Ruskin's Seven Lamps. It's like he sampled from every kind of manifesto going and stuck them all together. But he was actually very experimental. So a lot of the buildings from the 1980s and early 90s take on these much more expressive forms. So particularly 1989 was treated as one of the main deadlines for kind of state construction, because it was what was called the World Festival of Youth and Students, which is a kind of communist Olympic Games. And they used that as a deadline to build a huge number of trophy projects all across the city, because it was the one time when the country was going to open up and have all of these visiting foreign nations competing in the games. And so all of the kind of sports arenas, like the May Day Stadium, you know, which is famously still the largest stadium in the world, shaped like a kind of unfurling blossom, as these kind of petals roll out.
So far, we've got an unfurling blossom. We've got calligraphy brushes. We've got soaring shuttlecocks.
they are. And he says in his manifesto, you know, how buildings should kind of embody the function they contain. It's very much like Robert Venturi's idea of the duck, you know, that these buildings, he particularly lavishes praise on a recent maternity hospital, because he says that the form of this building appears to the visitor like the form of a mother embracing her child, because it has these extended wings. But I was very conscious in the book that we were obviously only being shown the sites that they wanted to show off, so there's still no way as a foreigner that you really get to see the so-called real North Korea.
Did you get a sense of that? I mean, the circumstances in which ordinary people live?
Very little. It was interesting. On our itinerary, you know, there was earmarked a tour of a kind of average person's home. And mysteriously on the day, that disappeared from the itinerary, and, you know, there was a last-minute change. And I suppose the only glimpse we got really was when we left Pyongyang to go to Kaesong, a city in the south near the border. As soon as you leave the kind of showcase capital, things start to change. So you could see from the windows of the bus, you know, much more dilapidated housing, kind of rusting electricity pylons, kids with very kind of ragged clothes playing out in the street. So it did very quickly become apparent that Pyongyang is this kind of showcase bubble, and standard of living rapidly declines as soon as you leave the capital.
Does that sort of dictator aesthetic work? I mean, in that city, do you feel inspired and uplifted, or is the effect somewhat more dominating and oppressive?
I think as an outsider, it's fascinating. I wouldn't say I ever felt kind of, you know, depressed or crushed by the architecture. I was more just in awe of it. I think particularly the presence of the leaders. Every public building you go to, in every room, one wall is given over to the portraits of Kim Il-sung and Kim Jong-il. And if there aren't the portraits, there are statues. And if there aren't statues, they use these flowers. So there was a flower developed called the Kim Il-sungia, and another one later developed called the Kim Jong-ilia. they're both a kind of pink and purple orchid. And throughout the city, you see these flowers used in mosaics and murals, and even people growing them on their balconies. So it means that even if you can't see a statue or a portrait of the leader at any one time, they're still, you know, their presence is still felt through these flowers. And that was fascinating, you know, always being under the kind of watchful gaze of one of the Kims, whether it's in portrait or floral form. But yeah, I can't say I found it too overwhelming, but I'm sure that's just because I was there, you know, for a limited time as a wide-eyed tourist rather than someone who has to live in that regime.
Sure. I mean, extraordinary place to visit. I'm wondering, is there a comparison? I mean, is there a place elsewhere that has the similar sort of feel? Give us a sense of that.
It's interesting. I've been to many of the, you know, kind of post-Soviet capitals, and I have to say it does really stand out as a very different place. I'm kind of urging everyone to visit, because it's changing rapidly. You know, I think within our lifetimes it will become much more similar to China with the amount of development that's going on there. I think the one thing that stands out to me is, as well as the colour, is the kind of garden-like quality of the city. So again, Kim Il-sung wrote that it would be a great garden of Juche architecture, but he actually put in planning legislation that only 25% of the land area could be given over to buildings. And so the rest is this kind of parkland. There's two rivers that run through the city with these kind of riverside promenades, two hills. You know, it's quite a kind of undulating topography, the set between two green hills. And when you're standing at the top of the tower of the Juche idea, which is the main kind of observation tower in the center of the city, with this gigantic red flame of glass rising from it, you really do get a sense of buildings in a parkland. You know, it almost feels like a campus, maybe a bit like Canberra. I mean, I've never been, I'm ashamed to say, to Canberra, but this idea of buildings laid out in a kind of green campus.
It's just another Canada of the soul, really. A cesspool of evil, potentially.
I'm sure on Kim Jong-un's radar. Yeah,
Oliver, thank you so much. What a wonderful trip. A rare experience.
Go visit for yourself.
Oliver Wayne, right now, clearly in the pay of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea.
I feel like I've become the kind of ultimate tourist operator for them, because I do keep telling everyone to go and see it for themselves.
Oliver is architecture critic for The Guardian. He's the author of Inside North Korea. We'll pop some links on our site and maybe an image or two so you can get a whiff of what Oliver is talking about, his visit to the extraordinary buildings of the Hermit Kingdom, a blueprint here on RN.